I mean, what we ultimately need for Bitcoin is we don't I'm not that convinced that we need to take, everything that Ethereum has done and put it onto Bitcoin. Like, we don't need all of the Ethereum stuff to exist on Bitcoin. I don't think so. But what I do know that we do need is we just need a way for me to be able to send Bitcoin to you in a scalable and private fashion, just so that Bitcoin as a currency works.
Welcome to Bankless, where today we explore the frontier of Bitcoin layer twos. This is Ryan Sean Adams. I'm here with David Hoffman, and we're here to help you become more bankless. The big question, can Bitcoin scale through layer twos the way Ethereum has? I think it's the most important question that Bitcoin builders are facing today. And it's hard. There's a lot of noise out there. We got to find out what's real, what's narrative, what's a scam, what the future actually looks like for Bitcoin. That's why we're having this episode today with Eric Wall. He's on today, and he's got the most thorough take that David and I have heard on this subject. He's a perfect guest for this because not only does Eric tell it like it is, he also understands both Ethereum and Bitcoin. So a few topics we get into in the episode. Number one, the Ordinals and Runes Awakening, why that is upon us and what effect it's had. Number two, why Lightning failed. Number three, the state of Bitcoin layer twos. Where are they today? Number four, we talk about BitVM and the fatal flaw it might have. Number five, we talk about the answer, the solution, the cat opcode. You'll have to hear Eric talk about that and evangelize for it. Number six, Eric's message to us, be extremely cautious when you hear the words Bitcoin layer two, and why he says that. And number seven, why Eric is optimistic about Bitcoin's future and the building that is going on today.
The progress of what you can do on Bitcoin, the evolution of Bitcoin, I think it actually runs in parallel to the story of Eric Wall himself. Early Bitcoiner who like self-described as becoming an outcast out of Bitcoin because the laser-eyed monetary maximalists decided that you don't put any sort of ZK magic on Bitcoin. That's not what it's for. And then entered the Bitcoin dark ages where Eric Wall was forced to look elsewhere for scaling solutions. And that's where he found the layer two space. Outside of Bitcoin, but still had like his first love. These are all his words that I think he used to describe his own arc when we did our first episode with him. Eric Wall comes back and kind of gives us an arc of the Bitcoin Renaissance, how it started, where it's gone, and what the current frontier is, the current limitations too of the Bitcoin layer two space, and what might be next steps for the actual technical evolution of the Bitcoin protocol. So just a masterclass in Bitcoin, I would say, along with just like the current issues, current events of the time. So let's go ahead and get right into that conversation with Eric Wall. But first, a moment to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make the show possible, especially Kraken, our preferred place to buy crypto in 2024. If you do not have an account with Kraken, consider clicking the links in the show notes to getting started with Kraken today. If you want a crypto trading experience backed by world-class security and award-winning support teams, then head over to Kraken, one of the longest-standing and most secure crypto platforms in the world. Kraken is on a journey to build a more accessible, inclusive, and fair financial system, making it simple and secure for everyone, everywhere, to trade crypto. Kraken's intuitive trading tools are designed to grow with you, empowering you to make your first or your 100th trade in just a few clicks. And there's an award-winning client support team available 24/7 to help you along the way, along with a whole range of educational guides, articles, and videos. With products and features like Kraken Pro and Kraken NFT Marketplace and a seamless app to bring it all together, it's really the perfect place to get your complete crypto experience. So check out the simple, secure, and powerful way for everyone to trade crypto, whether you're a complete beginner or a seasoned pro. Go to kraken.com/bankless to see what crypto can be. Not investment advice. Crypto trading involves risk of loss.
Celo is the mobile-first, EVM-compatible, carbon-negative blockchain built for the real world, driving real-world use cases like mobile payments and mobile DeFi, and with Opera MiniPay as one of the fastest growing Web3 wallets, Celo is seeing a meteoric rise with over 300 million transactions and 1.5 million monthly active addresses. And now Celo is looking to come home to Ethereum as a layer two. Optimism, Polygon, Matter Labs, and Arbitrum have all thrown their hats in the ring for the Celo layer two to build upon their stacks. Why the competition? The Celo layer two will bring huge advantages like a decentralized sequencer, off-chain data availability secured by Ethereum validators, and one block finality. What does that all mean for you? With Celo Layer 2, gas fees will stay low and you can even pay for gas natively using ERC20 tokens, sending crypto to phone numbers across wallets using Social Connect. But Celo is a community-governed protocol. This means that Celo needs you to weigh in and make your voice heard. Join the conversation in the Celo forums, follow Celo on Twitter, and visit Celo.org to shape the future of Ethereum.
Arbitrum is the leading Ethereum scaling solution that is home to hundreds of decentralized applications. Arbitrum's technology allows you to interact with Ethereum at scale with low fees and faster transactions. Arbitrum has the leading DeFi ecosystem, strong infrastructure options, flourishing NFTs, and is quickly becoming the Web3 gaming hub. Explore the ecosystem at portal.arbitrum.io. Are you looking to permissionlessly launch your own Arbitrum Orbit chain? Arbitrum Orbit allows anyone to utilize Arbitrum's secure scaling technology to build your own Orbit chain, giving you access to interoperable, customizable permissions with dedicated throughput. Whether you are a developer, an enterprise, or a user, Arbitrum Orbit lets you take your project to new heights. All of these technologies leverage the security and decentralization of Ethereum. Experience Web3 development the way it was always meant to be. Secure, fast, cheap, and friction-free. Visit arbitrum.io and get your journey started in one of the largest Ethereum communities. Bankless Nation, Eric Wall is a crypto OG, first enamored by Bitcoin and the many irreplaceable properties that Bitcoin has, and then later also by many of the technical research breakthroughs in the Ethereum ecosystem. Eric now finds himself straddling many different universes, but all with strong cryptography and trust assurances underpinning what Eric finds interesting and pays attention to. Eric also recently shaved his head because the ETH BTC ratio broke below a certain level that he said that it wouldn't, even though no one really asked him to do that. Eric, welcome back to Bankless.
We're happy he did, though.
Well, there are some people that insist that Eric doesn't just lose a bet like that. So they think that the reason that I shaved my head was because I was camouflaging a hair transplant. So that I lost the bet in order to get a hair transplant without anyone noticing. And I'm fine with either of those theories. I'm happy either way.
Wait, but either like, or maybe both.
What was the real reason? So wait, did you shave it in solidarity with Ethereum or in solidarity with Bitcoin? Or like, what was the, I'm not familiar with the whole story. Just David showed up one week to me and he was like, yo, Eric shaved his head.
There's multiple reasons. You could say I shaved it in solidarity with the fragmentation issues of Ethereum.
Okay. Thank you.
Or you could say that it was there was this guy who kept haggling me over a prediction that I made that we had already reached the low for the year for the ETH-BTC ratio. And so I kind of bundled all those together and just shaved my head. And I think I was kind of done with the man bun anyway. I think the man bun had lived its life. So I think this is for the better.
Are you ready to make another prediction on the show today about the ETH Bitcoin ratio? Have we now can you call a low? And what will you do publicly? I want you to, what will you do if you're wrong about that?
Yeah. I think we've reached low for the year. I don't know which parts of my body I've left to shave.
It doesn't have to be a shave. It could be like tattoo.
Yeah,
you know.
We can do a tattoo.
You could fight David. People are doing that from the Bitcoin
community. One at a time. Everyone get in line.
I'm happy fighting David if I get to join the ring with Nick. I think me and Nick together stands a chance against
David.
Oh,
my God.
Well, first time I ever met Eric Wall in real life, I think I was immediately put into a pretty aggressive headlock.
That's true. And that's one of the reasons that I fear for Nick, because you were kind of like, I don't know how, if I could have gotten you down, like you're kind of, you know,
resistant.
Well, okay. Since we're going into the story, like this was at ETHCC right after COVID. So this was the first time I was meeting basically everyone I had been talking to online for the last like 3 years. And I'm in line at some party for, I think, like the bar or something. And I get put in a headlock. And I'm like, oh, okay. Somebody who I know is putting me in a headlock, in a friendly headlock. And they're going to let go. And I'm going to turn around and realize who this is. Except then, like, the being let go never really happened. The headlock just got more and more intense over time.
Dude, it's a Bitcoiner headlock. We're not dabbling with an Ethereum headlock here.
I think my main gripe was that you guys in the Ethereum world have started to call Ethereum clients that just sync the Ethereum state rather than executing every single transaction. You call those full nodes. Whereas in Bitcoin,
they are.
We have to validate every single transaction. So I was like, there's David. I'm gonna punish him for this. Diluting the term of what a full node actually means, coming up with new terminology and shit. And I guess that's what we're gonna talk about a little bit today. What's the definition of an L2? And there's also been like a degradation of that term, which you guys have also played a little smart part. I have too. Like we're all guilty of degrading what
term
it means
dilution.
To be an L2. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I love when Eric Wall comes on an episode because I know we're going to bring back the purity of decentralization and why we're here.
And trustlessness.
We should get into it then.
Let's set the landscape a little bit. Eric, almost 2 years ago, November of 2022, you and I did an episode discussing the technical potential of ZK layer twos on Bitcoin. This was like, it was only 18-ish months ago, but still super early. Like ordinals weren't a thing. Runes weren't a thing. Everything was completely theoretical. And now not only do we have both tokens and NFTs on Bitcoin, but now there's this emerging class of layer twos on Bitcoin. How would you like explain or characterize the arc of what Bitcoin was back then? I'll call that like 2022, 2021 Bitcoin dark ages. Maybe you agree or don't agree. But like characterize the arc of Bitcoin technological progress since then. Like, what do you think about the current direction of Bitcoin?
If I recall correctly, I think the origin of that episode was that the Human Rights Foundation, together with a grant from Starkware and CMS Holdings, assigned a research paper to be written about what are the potential scalability benefits of putting a ZK rollup on Bitcoin within the block size constraints of Bitcoin. Like if you just use the full 4 megabyte block that Bitcoin has, how far can we get with the ZK rollup in like ideal circumstances? And John Light was the person that wrote that. I was the person that at Human Rights Foundation that sort of selected the person to write the paper, and I selected John Light because I think is what I liked about him was that he was actually sort of anti ZK rollups before writing the paper. But I know that he's a neutral guy and he's going to stick to like what the research says. And the results that he came to were pretty interesting. Like we could be looking at a 40x, 50x scalability improvement on Bitcoin if we had a ZK verifier and a covenants opcode on Bitcoin. So that was like, I think back then what we were excited about was that, well, if we actually had ZK rollups on Bitcoin, the not only would the scalability improve significantly, but we would also be able to tap into the full expressiveness that ZK rollups give. And that could also lead to privacy enhancements, because if you have a zero knowledge proof, you can embed any type of virtual machine, private or non-private, into that as well. So ZK rollups suddenly like came back to the scene as this is like a real this has a real potential to improve Bitcoin on all the sort of facets that we could think of. So I think we were just trying to bring back ZK rollups back into the discussion of what should the next soft fork in Bitcoin be. And there were some people at that time that were thinking that, you know, a ZKP verifier opcode is maybe not impossible to get into Bitcoin. So maybe we should look more into that. But to sort of describe the overall arc of what has been happening since then is that, I mean, this was still like ZKP verifiers in Bitcoin were still, you know, there's a lot of people that needs convincing, and it's not only the people that need convincing, it's also which type of ZKP verifier do we put into Bitcoin, because it's not like in Ethereum where like you have a roll up and you can just upgrade the roll up to use we usually have like admin keys that with a delayed function can upgrade the rollup to use some type of new circuit if you find a new one. But in Bitcoin, we really have like one soft fork, and then we have one zero knowledge proof system, one proving system. And that now maybe has to be the zero knowledge proof way that we, you know, verify things in Bitcoin for, I don't know, 5 years, 10 years.
Right. So we only have like one shot. You got to get it right the first time.
Yeah, we got to get it right the first time. That led to some discussions of like, let's maybe put something more generalized, like a ZK WASM verifier, and then we can put other types of ZK circuits inside that, so that the ZK WASM sort of verifies the Starks and the Snarks and the Groth 16s of the world. But what has happened sort of recently over the last year, as I've gone around and spoken to different researchers, the most significant one, I think, was in Palo Alto last year, where we got together a bunch of, you know, ZK interested people in Bitcoin, which aren't a lot of people, by the way. There's, within the research community of Bitcoin, I'd say there's a small fraction of people that are knowledgeable enough to have a real conversation about zero knowledge proof and Bitcoin. But the sort of crew that we could amass, that we could gather, we gathered in Palo Alto, and Going out of that meeting, I actually felt we were further away from getting zero knowledge proofs into Bitcoin than I felt before getting into that meeting. So I don't, I'm sort of less optimistic that we're going to get a CKP verifier opcode in Bitcoin in the next, you know, say 2 or 3 years.
Why pessimistic on that? Is it just so hard to get any kind of opcode into Bitcoin, you know, much less a ZK proof like opcode, that you just think that's like politically insurmountable? Or I don't even know if politically is kind of the right word for that.
Yeah. So choosing the right one and not being able to upgrade that is maybe the hardest challenge to tackle. But there are other. So if you wanted them to do what I described, that you wanted to have like a WASM, a ZK WASM that you put other verifiers into, then the problem is that if you want, for example, Starks, which I think are like the least, they use the least exotic cryptographic primitives. If that's what you want, then you sort of lose those benefits if you verify them in a sort of a WASM environment. Because if you have a different layered ZK verifiers on top of each other, you sort of lose the characteristics of one if they sort of all have to go through a funnel of multiple ZK verifiers, and the complexity increases too. And I think another thing that has shown that has made me more pessimistic is that, you know, we're fighting right now to just get this OPCAT opcode into Bitcoin. And we're making very good strides, but OPCAT is basically an opcode that the only thing that it does, it concatenates two elements on the stack. So Bitcoin is like a stack-based scripting language. So you have like a bunch of elements that are on a stack, and you can multiply them. You can use addition. You can use subtraction, but you can't really do anything like super advanced. For example, you can't even concatenate, which is a pretty regular thing that you do in programming. Like you concatenate two strings. So if I have A, B, and C, D, and I concatenate them, I have A, B, C, D. Or if I have a 2 and a 2 and I concatenate them, I have 22. So that sounds like, so the most, like if you had a calculator and there was a concatenate button, that's like one of the simplest, like it's more simple than cosine or sine or something like that. And even that is like a massively technical conversation in Bitcoin. Like, and the conversation is really about, does this destroy Bitcoin and in effect the world? Like, does this destroy humankind? Is sort of the conversation.
The stakes are high.
Concatenating numbers is like a really dangerous thing.
Can't divide by zero on that.
Right. However, like one interesting thing about concatenating strings is that Merkle tree, how you get a Merkle tree actually just comes from concatenating hashes. So you have, let's say you have 16 hashes at the base layer of a pyramid, and you concatenate those until you have 8, and then you have 4, and then you have 2, and then you have 1. That is actually how a Merkle tree is constructed. And if you can then verify the hash of the root node in that Merkle tree, now you can verify Merkle roots. And blockchains in general, like how both Ethereum and Bitcoin, Merkle verification is like one of the primitives that we use the most. So like optimistic rollups, Merkle tree verification, syncing the Ethereum state root, Merkle tree verification, SPV proofs in Bitcoin, Merkle tree verification or Merkle root verification. And it turns out that with just that small opcode alone, I think we should get into this a bit later in the episode, but just through concatenation, we can get Merkle verification, but we can also get a form of covenants. I don't know how familiar you guys are with covenants, but that's
marginally,
like...
Yeah.
Covenants is the ability to create, let's call them finite state machines. You know, Bitcoin is stateless, doesn't have a way to update variables and carry over state from one transaction to the other. Covenants is a way to do that. It's a way to sort of restrict where coins can go in specific paths in sort of like a state machine. You can sort of program that state machine to decide like how the different paths in the state machines can look like and what you do in those different paths. Apparently, concatenation alone through some weird cryptography that comes from Schnorr signatures, you can actually do this with ECDA signatures too, you can actually get covenants with just this one concatenation opcode alone. And you could even, there's some people at Starkware that think that they can even actually program a Stark verifier with just this one simple opcode that's cat. So you could actually verify like Stark where Starks. And if you have covenants and Starks, what we talked about in that previous episode that you realized, you need a ZKP verifier and you need recursive covenants in order to create ZK rollups on Bitcoin. So if the Stark verifier works with cat, which we're still unsure about, then we could actually get ZK rollups on Bitcoin. At my company, Taproot Wizards, since we don't know for sure yet that we're going to be able to do ZK Starks with just cat alone, we have an alternative approach which does optimistic verification of arbitrary computation. It uses something called MAT, which again uses Merkle trees to a very large extent, so that you know how in optimistic rollups that you have a state root and then you update that state root with another one, and then in order to find if there was like fraud between those state roots that didn't follow a specific state transition function, you can do bisection games and identify, okay, this is the mm-hmm. part where you lied about what the computation was. We can do that in Bitcoin if we have Merkle Merkle root verification. So that is basically the idea of MAT. So if you bundle MAT with recursive covenants, then you can get a real version of optimistic. It actually becomes more like Plasma, but some hybrid between Plasma and optimistic rollups with just cat alone, even if we can't do Starks. So that was a mouthful.
And I think that does a really good job kind of illustrating some of the aspirations that technical people have for the future of Bitcoin rollups, and also the technical hurdles that need to be overcome in order to actually make true, valid layer twos spawn from Bitcoin. But Eric, also at the same time, we're seeing many, many Bitcoin layer twos spawning to this day that are skipping over basically everything that you just laid out. Because as maybe listeners kind of got the gist of, it's really hard and complicated and not technically there yet. Yet nonetheless,
an opcode in specifically, yeah, right?
Exactly. But like nonetheless, there are the Bitcoin layer twos are like a whole thing. Like VCs are funding them. Users are starting to use them. One of them just went mainnet this week. So how do you like square these two things? How do you feel about that dislocation, that discrepancy between, well, you don't have OP cat in, yet nonetheless, Bitcoin layer twos as a narrative is here. How do you feel about this?
Yeah, so this is difficult, but I think what basically happened was that Casey Rottermore invented the Ordinals protocol, and I think maybe a bigger invention than sort of the Ordinals protocol itself was this thing which are called envelopes, which is how you packet very large blobs of arbitrary data into Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. And basically
finding data availability.
Yeah, it's like oh, apparently we had access to call data in Bitcoin, a part of the block space that we don't execute. That's just a dumb data blob. Apparently we had that, and you needed to come up with a small script which it basically creates an if statement, and then that whole if statement is false, so you never actually check what is underneath that if statement, because you just know that this part of the script is false. And then what you can do with the rest of the script is you can just put arbitrary data in there. So that is what is called an envelope in Casey Rottermore's ordinal theory. And that ability we've actually had the ability to packet large amounts of arbitrary data in Bitcoin before. It was just way more clunky. Like you could divide all these data blobs into different transaction outputs. And it was just like you needed to be a somewhat savvy programmer writing a arbitrary data scheme in Bitcoin that like looked in different parts of transactions and carved out this part from here, this part from here, this part from here. But basically with this sort of envelope trick, it became very easy in a block explorer to see, oh, there's all my data. Like I can see in the block explorer, there's all that data. And I don't have to like tie it together with that transaction input and that transaction input. So what this means is that What this meant was that, okay, now we can put 400 kilobyte data blobs in single transaction inputs in Bitcoin, and they will propagate in the Bitcoin network. That's usually one of the issues. Like when you create non-standard transactions in Bitcoin, while they're valid in the blockchain, nodes will not propagate them. And miners running that same software will not actually put them into blocks. But if another miner does, it will still be a valid block and they'll accept it as valid. But what we had since SegWit and Taproot was that we had this 400 kilobyte arbitrary data blobs that propagated freely over the network, and miners included them into the blockchain. So now all of a sudden we have like this huge part of the block, which is like a place where, you know, it's a free for all. You can do whatever. You could even write an entire EVM inside of that arbitrary, like as a sovereign roll up, you could embed a whole blockchain into the Bitcoin blockchain that way. And that was actually what I, so we started using this for JPEGs, right? So, Taproot Wizard, and yeah, so the first
shameful. I can't believe you did that, by the way.
Yeah, so the first ordinal inscription number one is just dick butt.
Of course, dick butts. Let's go. Let's go.
Yeah, and that was actually inscribed by our CTO at the he joined later as the CTO of Taproot Wizards, and he's actually the same guy that has now implemented this way of how you use the CAD opcode to create like recursive covenants. So he's actually a super smart guy. But the first thing that he did when he sort of discovered the ordinals protocol, inscription number one, just put a dick butt in there. That's the thought that I had was that, okay, well, we have this arbitrary data space in Bitcoin. Now we can build meta protocols inside of Bitcoin that are like, we don't have to work with the same confines as previous meta protocols as Bitcoin had to, you know, confine themselves to. So like writing meta protocols inside of Bitcoin is actually not something that is super new. You know that USDT used to exist on Bitcoin, and then Ethereum sort of took over all that USDT. That meta protocol was called the OmniLayer. So that was a fungible token standard that lived inside of Bitcoin. And there's been other protocols like Counterparty was also a protocol like that. But however, they had to sort of work with restrictions on how much data they could put on there. So you couldn't have like an Ethereum style sequencer that, you know, takes all transactional data and ZK proofs and bundles them into each block of Bitcoin. That was like not really practical before, but since we had ordinals, that now became practical. Anyway, so what happened was after the dick butt, Taproot Wizards, we made a 4 megabyte block that was just a JPEG of a wizard, and then people realized, okay, so the entire Bitcoin block is just up for grabs. You can put any amount of. We had to like contact the miner and be like, can you like modify your node and like put it into the blockchain? Nowadays, there are specific services that are popping up that are doing this like as a service. So the Marathon mining pool has one called a Slipstream. So now like this is not something that you have to do anything weird. You just have to connect to the Marathon API and just send them whatever data you want to pack it in there. Anyway, so I mean, I guess as everyone knows, and you as Ethereum people know that, you know, Ethereum NFTs has sort of been struggling a little bit price-wise. Like, I don't know, Bored Ape is like 12 ETH these days. I don't know how the others are doing. Moonbirds, like a lot of these blue chip NFT collections have sort of collapsed. And I guess that some people felt that, well, we need a new narrative here. And the narrative was that, well, what if instead, like, we had links to JPEG? Like, what if instead of us putting IPFS links to pictures on the Ethereum blockchain, we inscribe the whole JPEG into the Bitcoin blockchain so it stays there forever? So we're working with a scarce Bitcoin block space. You know, all the nodes download all of the blockchain. It's going to get replicated over a whole network of tens of thousands of nodes. Those are like real pristine, like fine art NFTs. So that became like, that took its own life. And now we have marketplaces for that. So, and we have communities, we have DGEN communities for that. So contrasting to what the Bitcoin layer two space has been looking like in the past, because it's not the first time that we had like layer twos, let us call them sides, so side chains, so the liquid side chain, the rootstock side chain. That's not new at all. We've had those for a very long time. Now that there's like large amounts of money that are floating around trading NFTs on Bitcoin, now there's a sort of season two in the Bitcoin space where we have our own native degens that are trading NFTs with Bitcoin. And actually the way that we trade those NFTs is actually kind of interesting as well, because most of the trading for Bitcoin NFTs are actually on chain using something called pre-signed Bitcoin transactions. And those are atomic swaps. Like you atomically swap the Bitcoin NFT, which is actually a specific Satoshi, well, a specific UTXO, or the first Satoshis of a specific UTXO. You swap them with Bitcoin in one transaction atomically. Doesn't go through a centralized exchange. It's actually on-chain atomic swaps. That's how NFTs on Bitcoin are traded. So it's like
you're basically like writing an open check saying, hey, whoever wants to fulfill this check, here's a check for like this amount of money for this JPEG. If you want to take the other, if you also want to sign here, you can send me this amount of money and then you can have the JPEG.
Yeah, exactly. So this is the start of the Bitcoin season two starting to drum up, right? And then, so one of the things that I was sort of trying to make popular was that, well, we can use this arbitrary block space to create sovereign rollups on Bitcoin. So that means like you take something like, let's say for example, you take ZK Sync and you look at what is it that they're putting into call data on Ethereum. Well, I should say in the blob space of Ethereum, you just take that and you put it into Bitcoin in the Bitcoin blob space. Now you're not going to get like Ethereum nodes that are verifying those zero knowledge proofs and making sure that that computation was done successfully. Right. But you can have other nodes, like external nodes, that read the data out of the Bitcoin blockchain, and you will get the ordering from Bitcoin, and you'll get the data availability from Bitcoin and the persistence of data from Bitcoin. So that's what sovereign rollups are. Many of those sort of Celestia sovereign rollups work the same way. They become sort of their own layer once, but they get so much of the properties of Bitcoin that this is now actually an interesting way to make. I wouldn't necessarily call it a layer two. It's a layer two if it does if it aggregates transaction in some like compactful way. So there are some people that are saying that if you use zero knowledge proofs with state diffs, now that's a layer two because you don't have all of the transactional data. But in reality, like how state diffs work, it's state diffs only really compress like the transactional data that you have to put on chain if it's sort of the same state that is getting updated multiple times in the same block. And a lot of times in blockchains, you're sending money to Charlie is sending money to Eva, and Eva's interacting with a compound contract. Like there's a bunch of things that is happening. Not always can you just like compress all of that because like there's different states that needs to get updated. But anyway, you get some compression benefits when you have state diffs. So I guess you could call some of those sovereign rollups like actual layer twos. Anyway, so started with ordinals, and then some people are starting to build sovereign rollups. Alpen Labs and Chainway are some of the teams that are working on sovereign. Bison Labs is another one. And I'm an investor in Chainway and in Alpen Labs. And I was sort of advising them to, well, you can't build your ZK rollup right now on Bitcoin because we don't have these ZKP verifier opcodes, but you can build a sovereign rollup and then, and you know, make a vibrant ecosystem. And then by the time that we actually do have a way to verify zero knowledge proofs on Bitcoin, you can transition. Mm-hmm. So that's like mid 2023, and now there's like, okay, we have ordinals and we have sovereign rollups. There's like a full Ethereum virtual machines running inside of Bitcoin that are zero knowledge proven. This is what is getting like investors to get excited. So even then, like in the middle of 2023, people are getting excited about Bitcoin innovation in a new way because, and if you also think about it, like all that. What was the reason for like, okay, so you have rootstock and you have liquid on connected to Bitcoin through sidechains. But what is the user base? Like, who's going to use that? There's traditionally been almost like no material usage on those chains. But if you see that super, like, if you see that very vibrant ordinal activity, and you imagine that, well, they're going to hit scalability limits, and also the way that they're doing, and I don't know, so, you know, it started with NFTs on Bitcoin, but then that later gave rise to another thing, which were called BRC20 tokens. And I think you guys are familiar with those, right?
Yeah.
But the BRC20 tokens suck. Like, I don't know. I don't know if you have tried actually to transact or sell a BRC20 token. It is the worst trading experience that has existed in any protocol that has existed under the sun of blockchain since the dawn of mankind. It is so awful. No, it is so awful because you have to sell. First of all, like, if I want to purchase some BRC20 token, there's going to be listings like offers for sale. And I can buy 10,000 from that guy and 60,000 from that guy and 100,000 from that guy of these tokens. And then I have these like clumps of like piles of tokens. And then if I want to sell like five of those, then I have to make like a new transaction that slices up five from my existing pile. And then I can sell that pile of five. But then the buyer who now wants to buy, let's see why he wants to buy three, he can't buy 3,000. He has to buy either my whole 5,000 pile or none of it. So it's like, The tokens are fungible, but you have to sort of manually slice them up as pizza slices, and then they're like non-fungible.
Brute force fungibility.
That's how BRC20 token trading works and still works this day on Bitcoin. So everyone's sort of realizing that, okay, there's a lot of money here, but they cannot, like, we don't have automated market makers either.
Right.
So we don't have like liquidity pools or anything. So the whole trading is like completely one-sided, where there are offers, but there are no bids. So there's just one-sided liquidity marketplaces. So there's no liquidity pools or anything.
Really quick in the BRC 20 thing, that was kind of like old tech, right? We had Casey, the creator of Ordinals and Runes, on the podcast not too long ago. And so, like, very excited about the launch of Runes, which, like, the TLDR from him was basically like, Runes is a better version of a Bitcoin fungible token. It's an upgrade from the BRC20. Are you also considering Runes when you're talking about BRC20, or is that sort of like, is the new tech a lot better?
So Runes are better in the sense that they integrate with like traditional Bitcoin wallets better. So Runes are just UTXOs. BRC20s are not. BRC20s are like, you have to go into the arbitrary data space of an inscription and then read a JSON, and then you understand, okay, this person owns that many of that BRC20. In Runes, it's UTXO based. So if you own this UTXO, in the up return of that UTXO, it'll say how many of those runes that you own. So you can build like regular Bitcoin wallets that are only used to working with UTXOs. They can like own these runes as pure UTXOs. So it becomes a lot more easier to build, to integrate that with sort of traditional Bitcoin wallet software. However, the trading experience is exactly as shit as BRC20.
Oh, no.
So, yes.
I didn't realize that.
So right now Unisat is like the biggest marketplace for BRC20s and Runes. Actually, I think about OKX eclipsed it for a while. I think it might be back to Unisat marketplace at the moment. But as a user, as a technical person, you understand, well, Runes have benefits. But as just like the retail user that's trying to interact with these tokens, it looks exactly the same. Like, you still have to like, okay, I have to buy either like 1.5 million of this token, or I have to buy 20,000 of this token, and then I have to slice them up. So like the trading experience is the same. So it's the exact same shit. It's just it just works better for people that want to integrate this with Bitcoin wallets. So runes are great. They're better. Like, we love them. And the main reason that we love them is because BRC20s bloated the UTXO set of Bitcoin. So if you had if you're buying BRC20 tokens, every time that you're splitting them up or sending them to someone else, the UTXO set just keeps growing. And that's basically like the state. So this, you know, you have like problems with state bloat in Ethereum, like the state right. just keeps getting bigger. In Bitcoin, yeah, our UTXO set gets bigger also, but sometimes you want to take all your unspent transaction outputs and you want to send them to one person, and then it actually collapses. So the UTXO set tends to grow and shrink depending on people, like when people doing are stuff, sort right. of consolidating their transactions. But BRC20 tokens had no consolidation mechanism. So it was just like, and if you look at these charts.
Just up only with state.
Yeah, up only, and that means harder RAM requirements right. on Bitcoin nodes. So it's actually kind of like an attack on the Bitcoin system. Runes avoid that because they are UTXO based. They can collapse and combine in the same way that UTXOs do. So they don't have that up only UTXO problem. So, but they didn't solve the user experience right, the of UX trading problem. Them. Yeah, they didn't solve the UX problem. Sadly, they just solved. Okay, now people are more happy with the growth rate of the UTXO set. So we still, so the situation that we're in, that we have been in, is that, well, now there's actually a need for layer twos on Bitcoin that can offload some of this UTXO bloat and runes trading. And you have seen the fees gone crazy on Bitcoin, right? There was a, I think there was a day that, it was, of course, day, it was yeah. right mm-hmm. yeah, right after halving. It was $78 million in yeah. fees. Yeah,
$80 million day. And that was a day where like Ethereum, just to give context, was like $5 million or something. So right. like actually like it crushed Ethereum that day in fee revenue.
A single typical Bitcoin transfer was $170 or something Ooh. For a short period of time.
Yeah. So, I mean, doing this degen token and NFT trading right now is still small. So like sometimes the fees are low, but obviously this is not going to scale right. for the long term. So that is why VCs are saying that there's going to be a need for second layers on Bitcoin. So they're very interested in these sovereign rollups, like, okay, how can they aggregate transactions with ZK? And they're even interested now in more fanciful versions of federated multisigs. So if you're not just like, so Liquid is an 11 out of 15 multisig on Bitcoin. That's the right. you know predominant you know famous sidechain on Bitcoin. But if you start doing something that's like a little bit more exotic than that, then Bitcoin VCs are now okay. Like maybe this is interesting. And I think like the analogy that I'd bring is that I'd say is that okay, so Polygon started out as a sidechain to Ethereum, and they were Ethereum aligned. And then the Polygon proof of stake chain launched before rollups really even existed as a
it
thing.
It did. It was true.
Yeah. And then by the time that there were, you know, ZK and rollup technology existed, they started to pivot to that. So I think that's maybe how the VC thinks that, okay, some of these things are sidechains. As long as they can get traction and momentum, they're going to be able to adopt any type of new technology for layer twos on Bitcoin that will emerge.
Mantle, formerly known as BitDAO, is the first DAO-led Web3 ecosystem, all built on top of Mantle's first core product, the Mantle Network, a brand new high-performance Ethereum Layer 2 built using the OP stack, but uses EigenLayer's data availability solution instead of the expensive Ethereum Layer 1. Not only does this reduce Mantle Network's gas fees by 80%, but it also reduces gas fee volatility, providing a more stable foundation for Mantle's applications. The Mantle Treasury is one of the biggest DAO-owned treasuries, which is seeding an ecosystem of projects from all around the Web3 space for Mantle. Mantle already has sub-communities from around Web3 onboarded, like Game7 for Web3 gaming, and Bybit for TVL and liquidity and on-ramps. So if you want to build on the Mantle network, Mantle is offering a grants program that provides milestone-based funding to promising projects that help expand, secure, and decentralize Mantle. If you want to get started working with the first DAO-led Layer 2 ecosystem, check out Mantle at mantle.xyz and follow them on Twitter at @0xmantle.
Taking self-custody of your crypto is one of the most important things you can do on your bankless journey. It's also one of the hardest things to get right, with huge consequences if you don't. If you want help going bankless, talk to Casa. Casa helps you take custody of your crypto assets so you don't have to wonder whether you're doing it right. Casa is a one-stop shop for doing self-custody the right way. With Casa Vaults, you can hold Ether, Bitcoin, stablecoins, all with one simple app and multiple keys for the ultimate peace of mind, with a support team to help you every step of the way. But it doesn't stop at self-custody, because even though crypto is forever, you are not. We all plan on making life-changing wealth in crypto, but with Casa's inheritance product, life-changing wealth can elevate to generational wealth for your kids and your loved ones who don't know anything about crypto. With Casa, you won't lose your private keys and you won't accidentally take them to the grave either. Click the link in the description to get started securing your generational wealth.
Are you launching a token? Is it already live? How are you managing the legal and tax obligations for providing token grants to your team? It's no secret that token management gets complicated. Between learning all the legal language and tax obligations in every country that your team is in, token grant management can feel like an obstacle course, but it doesn't have to. That's where Toku steps in. Toku provides practical tools to handle token grants, allowing for effective oversight of token distributions and payroll tax compliance for employees, contractors, advisors, and investors. They also handle tax withholdings through their real-time tax calculations that can be done by Toku or integrated into any payroll EOR providers in any jurisdiction. Toku is a trusted provider of Protocol Labs, DYDX Foundation, Mina Protocol, and many more. Get started for free and make token compensation simple at toku.com/bankless.
Have you ever felt that the tools for developing decentralized applications are too restrictive and fail to leverage advancements from traditional software programming? There's a wide range of expressive building blocks beyond conventional smart contracts and Solidity development. Don't waste your time building the basics from scratch and don't limit the potential of your vision. Cartesi provides powerful and scalable solutions for developers that supercharge app development. With a Cartesi virtual machine, you can run a full Linux OS and access decades of rich code libraries and open source tooling for building in Web3. And with Cartesi's unique rollup framework, you'll get real-world scaling and computation. No more competing for block space. So, if you're a developer looking to push the boundaries of what's possible in Web3, Cartesi is now offering up to $50,000 in grants. Head over to Cartesi's grant application page to apply today. And if you're not a developer, those with staked CTSI can take part in the governance process and vote on whether or not a proposal should be funded. Make sure you're vote ready by staking your CTSI before the votes open.
And here's where the important part, the savior from the sky, which was this white paper called the BitVM white
paper. BitVM, we've heard so much about it.
Yes, so BitVM posited that you could actually do arbitrary computation on Bitcoin. Sort of what I was talking about previously where, okay, well, you have a Merkleized state. Mm-hmm. And if you transition to another state, you can sort of do these bisection games and identify this is the part where some computation went wrong. So like an optimistic way of doing computation for Bitcoin emerged through this white paper. It emerged as an idea through this white paper, and that is what people have been hacking on since October 2023. What people imagined was that we could use this mechanism of BitVM to, if it has the ability to do arbitrary computation on Bitcoin and sort of optimistically verify that, then we should be able to build something like optimistic rollups. Has been sort of the what people have been talking about, with the caveat. So what people have considered is technically possible today with BitVM is, you know how Arbitrum has whitelisted fraud provers, like whitelisted verifiers. So that is the technical state that you. That people thought that you could get with BitVM. So it's not perfect. It's not like a permissionless optimistic rollup where anyone who can post a security bond can challenge an invalid state root update. So that's what Arbitrum promises once they remove this whitelist.
That's what Arbitrum and BitVM would promise is like.
No. So Arbitrum promises that they're going to remove this whitelist.
But for BitVM, it's a hard constraint. You can't. Yeah.
It's a hard constraint. That is not the only hard constraint of BitVM, though, unfortunately, as sort of we've discovered. The Bitcoin scripting language is just the same today as it was, you know, years ago. There's nothing new. Like, we don't have covenants. We cannot do finite state machines. We could maybe inside sort of a state channel resolve arbitrary computation optimistically through a complicated verifier challenger game. However, one of the constraints is that, like, when you do this on Ethereum, you have sort of a, like, in Optimism, for example, you have sort of a chess clock dynamic where, okay, I'm going to assess that the fraud was happened here. So this is the part of the transaction that I'm disputing. Now, the sequencer then in Optimism has to prove, no, this is how I did the, so you sort of bisect down to the part where the computation was done incorrectly. But they have sort of a chess clock mechanism where, here's my proof, now it's your turn to give your proof back to me. In Bitcoin, we don't have like chess clocks. So you have like these like long time windows where you can either within that time window post your the second round in your multi-round fraud proof or not, which means that this the dispute resolution mechanism in BitVM could, like the first versions we saw of this would take 6 months. There's been some people that are now arguing that they can compress that down to 4 weeks. So where you guys are working with like seven day settlement windows, we're working with either 6 months, and maybe we can compress it down to 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. So we're struggling with like harder constraints on that side. The other thing that we're struggling with is that in order for this to work at all, you need to set up sort of a state channel between all the participants between all the challengers and verifiers. Or actually let's call them operators and verifiers. So that requires them to share pre-signed transactions that describes every single sort of state transition in the BitVM virtual machine. And they have to share all those transactions with each other. So that's like a large amount of data that has to be shared between the participants of this game, and it makes it very difficult for other channel participants to join sort of the BitVM dispute resolution game. So it has clunkiness on the sort of the setup side, it has clunkiness on the challenge response side, but the primary clunkiness that was discovered to me quite recently, because I was actually kind of bullish on BitVM. I've been writing, you know, tweets that are trying to describe like, this is how we can do something that looks quite similar to, you know, some flavor of optimistic roll up on Bitcoin. But there was a part of like, when we actually got to the implementation stage, and when I say we, I mean more the teams that I've jumped on. And so, the number of teams that are building on BitVM these days are Alpen Labs, there's Chainway, actually Rootstock is doing that, even Stax is doing this, and let's see, what am I forgetting? Well, basically the only exception is like Liquid is the only one that's not trying to do like the BitVM direction. BitLayer is another one, so if you see any fancy Bitcoin L2 these days, 80% probability is that they're building on BitVM.
Now, or intending to. They like explicitly say, hey, BitVM's not ready yet, but at some point we'll just move to BitVM. The one thing I want to add for listeners too is BitVM, correct me if I'm wrong, Eric, does not require an opcode change, importantly. Correct?
Yeah, that's the whole
that's the whole thing.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing. Yeah.
Okay.
You can do it natively on Bitcoin without anything. However, now we get to sort of the big problem, which I think might be an insurmountable problem. The problem with BitVM is that, so when you deposit funds to Optimism, you send in, here's my $10,000 of worth of Ether, I send it in. And then when you want to withdraw your funds, that's when you can do this fraud. Like that's when if the sequencer picks up the transaction and puts it into the state root, now there's an invalid transaction there. That's what you can do the fraud mechanism on. That's where you do the dispute resolution. It's on the withdrawal. Mm-hmm. In BitVM, it doesn't work like that. In BitVM, how it works is that the operator, so the sequencer, has to send the funds to the people that are owed these monies. So if you say, I want to withdraw, give me my $10,000 worth of Ether, then the sequencer will oblige and say, okay, here's your $10,000 worth of Ether. And then he can reimburse himself with the Ether that you previously posted. And it's the reimbursement that you can now do the fraud dispute resolution game on.
Right.
What that means is that he cannot use the money that you deposited to pay you out. He has to front the money, that capital for your withdrawal, and then he can reimburse himself later. When the first time that I read this, I thought like, okay, he does a withdrawal and then he reimburses himself for the money and then he processes the next withdrawal. But that's not how it works. It's a whole window of withdrawal that can be like, let's say, a week. Those withdrawals he has to front, and then after a week's time, he can now reimburse himself. And so that got us a little bit, because I mean, at Taproot Wizards, we also want to play around with L2s. Like we also want to improve the current situations of the BRC 20 tokens, the rune trading. We want to upgrade that and put it into environments where we can actually improve Bitcoin. And we have like longer term, like the vision that we at Taproot Wizards, it's not, okay, let's enable a bunch of degen trading on like meme coin trading on Bitcoin. That's actually not what we want to do. We want to provide like a more scalable environment for Bitcoin, the Bitcoin asset itself, and potentially add some type of zero knowledge type cryptography to give privacy to Bitcoin, which we desperately need. Anyway, so we studied, okay, so how large, what could the net outflows of a big rollup look like? So we did some analysis. We actually worked together with Data Always on this. I don't know if you're familiar with that researcher, but she or he does great research.
They're great.
And found out that in 2021, Arbitrum, within 1 week span, had $1 billion net outflow. And I think that was, do you remember like in the early days of Arbitrum, there was like a neon cat Ponzi that you played there?
Yeah, it was like the wow, right after the Arbitrum mainnet, like the neon cat Ponzi was like the first like reason why so many people pushed money into Arbitrum because this Ponzi was going on.
But then it ran out, like the game ran out because the token went to zero because there was like the APY that you were earning just inflated the token, so the token went to zero.
Right.
So people were farming and selling the token, and token went to zero, and now there was no longer any money to earn there. So all that billion of capital that had bridged into Arbitrum, they were like, okay, what's the next game that I can play? What other food token can I play? So this is not even like a malicious attack. This is just like, we want to go somewhere else and have fun somewhere else. Okay, so imagine now that you're the Arbitrum operator. I got to find $1 billion and what happens that if you cannot fulfill that liquidity requirement in that week, what you can do, like, so there are people that are now in the BitVM after we sort of brought this up as a big problem, they said, well, you can just, the role of the operator, you can just push that role to another operator and give him a chance to fulfill the liquidity requirements. And you can just kick the can down the road. But if this is like too big of a liquidity crunch that no one is going to be able to solve, I don't know how it actually helps. Like, okay, we can't do it. We push it over to the next guy. What are the odds that he's just go, okay, I just happen to have like $1 billion. I can resolve this.
So one of the main features of a layer two is that it allows many, many, many people to be aggregated all at once. And I think what you're saying is there's a fundamental problem here when there are many, many, many users of a layer two, but there's a single operator who's responsible for that withdrawal. And so that one single operator, if this layer two gets successful enough, they are, no matter how size their size is, they will still be overwhelmed by an eventual success scenario, which is that layer two has so much capital in it that eventually there's going to be a moment in which a lot of capital would like to outflow, and that one single operator can't be a sufficiently large market maker to satisfy the outflows out of that layer two. Like is that kind of the problem statement?
It's like a liquidity crisis, right?
It's a liquidity crisis. And so what can happen in that situation? If you do what the current like BitVM implementers say, well, you just push the can down the road and you give the rule to someone else. At the end, if no one can fulfill this liquidity crunch requirement, what happens in the best case is that you put it all the funds into a multisig, and now the multisig can distribute the funds to the participants without, like, they actually just receive all the money from the roll-up, and now they can, if they're honest, they can now send the funds to whoever owes them. But it actually just puts the hand in the full control of the multisig. And I mean, so you could argue like, okay, Ethereum has these kind of issues too, like with the security councils. But I mean, at least in Ethereum, we can move away from that. And the security councils can have time delays before they can take the funds. So this is the best as we can do. We can have an operator that has these upfront liquidity requirements. And if we can't fulfill them, it devolves into a multisig. And you can argue here that, okay, why did we do all this complexity with all the challenge response games and all right. the liquidity? If it all devolves into a multisig in the worst case, and sort of we have to build these systems with the worst case as the assumption, because right. if you're a George Soros type attacker, you can just force this to happen. You can force it to happen too. So then multisig is ultimately the underlying security model.
It seems like a pretty anticlimactic conclusion for a ton of technical research to make the BitVM happen.
It gets worse. It gets worse. Well, it gets worse because even if there's not a liquidity crunch, like even if it's happy days and I can satisfy, you know, $50 million worth of withdrawals, like I'm capitalized, I have VC funding and I'm using, but imagine how capital inefficient that operator is, that he needs to have $50 million of capital that he's rotating.
Non-productive
capital that he cannot, like, so right. he ultimately needs to charge higher fees from his customers in order to make it work, like in order to pay the interest that he has on that capital that is probably borrowed, then he has to make sure that he earns enough in his role as operator to make his business, you know, work.
Or you could be like fractional reserve, I guess, and just like face a possible run on the the chain, basically. And then if there's a run on the chain, then everything goes into, like, I'll call it bankruptcy court, which is like this kind of multi-sig for redemptions, I suppose.
I am talking about the fractional reserve situation, but even that fraction that he has to keep on hand is gonna be
A lot. 10% at least, you know.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of money. Like how much capital is in Arbitrum these days? Like we're talking about billions.
Over 15 billion.
Yeah, so are you going to want to keep 1.5 billion at hand?
Again, non-productively,
so anyway,
yeah.
Anyway, so the liquidity crunch issue is not the only problem that I'm thinking about. I'm also thinking about, well, you have this constraint of who can be a participant, like who can be a verifier. It's like it's more like a state channel than like an open system where anyone can sort of participate in. There's been a new paper called BitVM version 2, which I've heard from the people that work on it. It's still kind of impractical. And then you have these setup phases and you have these very long drawn out challenge response games that take 4 to 6 weeks. And if you're running by the model where you're delegating this liquidity crunch problem over to someone else, to someone else, to someone else, let's say you have 100 different operators that stand in line to take over this responsibility, and they all have a week on them. Now we're talking about like 100 weeks before it even devolves to a multisig. So I would rather have a multisig that just always works within minutes notice than potentially having a system that runs into a liquidity crunch, keeps my capital away from me for 100 weeks, and then devolves into a
multisig that always works is called a sidechain, though, right? And we already have those.
Yes. So I generally think like the people that went into BitVM, they did this with the best intentions. they're just trying to be, they're honest, good builders. They're just trying to make the best that they can with this actually pretty brilliant, pretty awesome new type of way of, you know, resolving arbitrary computation on Bitcoin. But as we get closer and as we start to understand these restrictions, it's starting to look like something that maybe isn't, sucks to say, like maybe isn't that much better than, like maybe just build a really, really good multisig with like loads of signers, and like you can have a large validator set, and then you can do like subcommittees that sign things around, like randomly assign committees to sign things quickly so that it functions. Like, for example, that's what I think what Botanics does. That is what the guys that you mentioned, that the guys are just spinning up their system. I think that's what the Mezzo, like TBTC, people are doing with these very large multi-sig sets. Yeah, so the Bitcoin L2 space, like where are we with all of this?
It seems to be that the Bitcoin layer 2 space is going to be built no matter what. Like technical constraints aside, like that ball is rolling. Like there are already committed builders here. There's already like VC interest in there. So like the Bitcoin layer 2 landscape is going to happen. It's just a matter of just like, what does it look like on the end of it?
Why do you say that, David? Why do you think it's going to happen? Is it sort of the case that now all of these like rollups are being developed and layer 2s are getting invested in? And like, even if BitVM proves to be sort of a dead end, right, like kind of the worst comes true here, then they'll still force like political change and the opcodes that Eric was talking about at the beginning of this episode to be pushed through? Or why do you think it's
not necessarily? I just think that like there is enough, like Eric's like going through the arc of Bitcoin history with ordinals and runes, and then like the constraints of the supply of block space on the Bitcoin layer one. All of that was to like, in my mind, was to express the need for Bitcoin layer twos, right? Like Bitcoin needs layer two. We've got ordinals, we've got runes. We are seeing up only interest in building on the layer one, which therefore creates the need for Bitcoin layer twos. And now also there has been just like an ecosystem of many, many, many Bitcoin layer twos across a broad spectrum of quality, like some like thinking about how to do this on the most technically advanced frontier possible, the high quality ones. And then like some on the opposite end of that spectrum, some vaporware kind of stuff. And like everything in between. So like this, but this whole ecosystem is now a category. There's like been venture investment in these teams. There's committed builders to building a product that they are calling a Bitcoin layer two, to do Bitcoin things that settle on Bitcoin. And so like, I think the ball is just rolled at this point. We're going to get some set of products on the other side of things that look and feel like Bitcoin layer twos. And it sounds like, according to Eric Wall's constraints of the Bitcoin, the BitVM, that there will be needing to be some shortcuts being taken. And now it's a matter of just like, what does the market feel is like satisfactory shortcuts, and what can they get out of that?
Yeah, I hear what you're saying here. And like, obviously, Eric can kind of answer this. But I guess to all you're saying, David, it feels like a narrative is here and building is happening. But from what I'm hearing is there's like this technical brick wall, which means all of the layer twos will like hit that brick wall and they can't have like a full layer two. Yes, they could have a sovereign roll up. Yes, they could do a sidechain with a super secure multi-sig, but like you can't be an Ethereum layer two style roll up with fraud proofs, et cetera, on chain. Yes?
Yeah, but also at the same time, we don't even have Ethereum style roll ups in the Ethereum ecosystem.
Sure.
Perfect on
chain. Sure. Okay.
Thank you for making my point.
Sorry for that sidebar, Eric.
I think David, you've gotten smarter over the years or something. I think you
I swear to God, I've always been this smart.
Yeah, it was ever since your headlock. You know, you just choked some sense into him.
No, but I think David is completely right in that, you know, ordinals, runes, demand for L2s, the ball is rolling. There are teams that have raised. There's this fantasy of BitVM coming in and like creating actually permissionless and trustless L2s on Bitcoin. Like demand is here and there's VC funding. And so like the VCs, like, I don't know. So I don't know how much these VCs care. Like the VCs can say, well, I don't actually care like how much your BitVM bridge sucks and how much you patch it up with multisigs that you hide. Because if
duct
we
tape
say,
works great, guys.
Yeah. If we say that this is a Bitcoin L2 that uses secret proofs somewhere and uses secret proofs for aggregation in some part of the stack and uses some BitVM things, something over again. Even if it all, so take Stacks, for example. Stacks is like a billion dollar, like multi, like I think it's like market cap's like $4 or $6 billion. Mm-hmm. Stacks is like, do you know what happened? I don't know how much time we have left of this episode, but I can go into like a small like detour into.
I want to know like if Stacks a real layer two, an Eric Wall definition of like what we just described layer two or not, and does it have a path to become one?
Yeah, so it's kind of funny. So the short answer is no, absolutely not.
Okay. But
what happened with Stacks was that Stacks had this consensus algorithm called proof of transfer. And how it worked was that people who owned Stacks token could stack them, and then other people would send Bitcoin to those people and win the right to create a Stacks block and earn the Stacks block reward. So they were basically bidding for Stacks, for the Stacks block subsidy, and also for the right to make a Stacks block. However, since this is happening inside a Bitcoin block, it's completely possible for the miner to just censor all the bids for the Stacks block reward and just send their own like one Satoshi bid and win the entire Stacks block for nothing. And this was actually happening. So F2 pool were completely fucking Stacks over and just picking out the Stacks block reward and didn't give a shit about Stacks. So Stacks has needed to fix that problem by completely revamping how sort of finality works in the Stacks blockchain. And they're calling that Stacks Nakamoto. They're using like signers to basically checkpoint which blocks are the valid ones. They're using both like mining and Stacks. It's a little bit complicated, but basically they're trying to like fix this problem of, okay, our shit was completely vulnerable to minor manipulation. They're rebranding Stacks into something that's called Stacks Nakamoto now. And because they have had to hotfix this problem in what I would describe in kind of an ugly way, they're calling now Stacks an L2. Like that, we fixed this finality problem with our blockchain, and now it's an L2. Even though, like, even if you read the white paper itself. They outline like these are the requirements for a real two on Bitcoin to exist. It requires the ability, and maybe I should have said this sooner. What is the definition of an L2? In my opinion, it's the ability for a user that has deposited funds into the L2 to have the unilateral right to pull those funds out whenever they want to. That's an L2.
Agreed. And I will say the Ethereum definition of an L2 as well. And sometimes that gets abused in the Ethereum world.
I'm glad that you said that, Ryan, because I've seen people all over the Ethereum space that are like, oh, well, L2. Yeah, but I agree. That should be the like how we define L2s. And we can call those other things. But yeah, that's my definition of an L2. And if you read the Stacks Nakamoto paper, then they do admit that they have made no strides and no progress towards like enabling the ability for you to unilaterally withdraw your funds back to the to the Bitcoin chain. So no, Stacks is not an L2. The BitVM things, like, I don't know if they're L2s, but they have this liquidity crunch constraint that pushes them to multi-sig in worst cases. So like to answer your question, like we don't kind of have L2s on Bitcoin. And as you say, there's sort of a technical brick wall here. And the thing that we need, and actually what the Bitcoin industry is working towards, is we need covenants. We need covenants because covenants allow us to create finite state machines. And if the covenants that we chose within the Bitcoin community was CAT is a covenants opcode, then we could do these Merkle tree verifications as a side bonus that actually allows us to build actual layer twos on Bitcoin. So no, Bitcoin doesn't really have practical or functional L2s at the moment. We need covenants, recursive covenants, and we need Merkle tree verification. CATS is one of those opcodes that gives us both. And that is why, like, I used to be Arbitrum delegate. I'm a board member of the Starknet Foundation. I'm an Optimism delegate. I'm actually one of the largest Arbitrum delegates.
I had no idea.
I've been dedicating, you know, because I came from the Bitcoin space, and I wanted to build better layer twos than what Lightning Network could provide. Mm-hmm. Because I think in a layer two, how it should work is that you give me your address and I'll send you funds. That's how the dynamic should work. That's not how it works in Lightning. And I think that Lightning is not going to be very successful if you tell me that, well, you can't send me funds yet. I'll have to go and borrow funds from David so that I have enough inbound liquidity to receive those funds. You know, crypto has UX challenges enough as it is, like, you know, for people to manage private keys and all that. You can't add, the second layers cannot add more UX challenges and think that they're going to be more successful than the layer ones are. They have to reduce the technical challenges that people face. And Lightning, unfortunately, added a bunch of, you know, technical constraints. When I was young, when I was naive, I thought that we'd make it work because decentralization is so important. Now I feel like if your system is so decentralized that the UX sucks, so that everyone uses custodial solutions instead, you have actually done a worse job at creating decentralization because there's so few people that actually use it. So that's sort of the adult take that we've come to. So anyway, rollups, I think, are the types of, even though I have my you know, reservations with how the fragmentation, I know you guys had an episode with Justin Drake not long ago about how we're going to solve fragmentation issues with shared sequencers. I pray to God that that works and it doesn't take like 3 years and then we figure out that it's like sharding. And, you know, my hope is out there that we're going to solve that. But just one single rollup alone is still a much better layer two solution than what Lightning is. Right. And that's the direction that I've been wanting us to go towards. So like no one... Mm-hmm. You know, I've wanted this as badly. Like I really want layer two solutions to work on Bitcoin. Like I'm not here to try to, if we could do them, like if Taproot Wizards could just spin up a BitVM rollup and it's going to work awesomely, we would be doing that right now. But there is no shortcuts here. We need covenants and probably we're going to need a way to do CKP verification also. If all the people that are like genuine about wanting to build proper L2s on Bitcoin, if we like sort of band together and get this cat opcode through, then I think we're actually in the clear. Then we don't have that much to worry about. So that is what we're fighting for at the moment. And I don't think that, you know, so this BitVM stuff that people are working on, there's not a finished implementation for that. Like that is, I would classify BitVM as sort of a, like a school experiment or something like that. It's going to take years to really flesh that out into like a production grade system that people can work with. The path to activating CAT might be a shorter way than that. So if you are a L2 builder in the Bitcoin space, the fastest way for you to actually get a proper permissionless bridge, a proper two-way peg without any liquidity constraints, that doesn't have these weird setup faces or weird like channel-based constraints where there's a limit on who can do like fraud proofs, then getting CAT activated is probably what you should be focused on. So that's sort of the message that we're trying to, if we can get all L2 builders on this goal together, then we're good. Otherwise, I'm not sure, so sure. We might be in a situation with like Polygon POS is the sidechain to Bitcoin for I don't know how many years. There was one other thing I wanted to say also, which is I think that the people who are building on BitVM now, I would classify them as earnest, genuine, talented. Some of them are extremely smart, extremely capable, and you know, just good, honest people that are trying to make this work. We haven't touched at all on like the whole scam side of Bitcoin L2s because ever since the BitVM paper came out, there's been the Bitcoin space has been awash with complete scam projects. I'm not sure if I should name their names specifically because I'm going to have them up my ass for the next couple of months if I do, but there are, one obvious one is like the one which was called Satoshi VM, they just said like we're a BitVM. They had some white paper that described something about BitVM. The white paper made no sense. The token launched on Ethereum and it actually trades now. You can search for it. It's SAVM is the ticker, and it's just like a complete scam ticker. It has nothing to do with Bitcoin whatsoever. Another one is called Merlin Chain, that actually like copied a lot of the you know how the sort of brand of Taproot Wizards is let's make Bitcoin magical again, and it's about wizards. So they just created Merlin Chain. It has like a wizard symbol, and their tagline is let's make Bitcoin fun again. And if you go to their technical docs, try to figure out like what is this. It says that it's a Polygon ZKEVM Bitcoin layer 2 that uses Celestia as a data availability layer. But if it's a Polygon ZKEVM that uses Celestia as the data availability layer, how is it using Bitcoin again? And then in some, like if you'd read further into the docs, it says you'll find like cropped out screenshots from Robin Linus BitVM paper somewhere where they just, oh, you can use NAND gates to do arbitrary computation. This is like future research. But in terms of what actually exists on Bitcoin, it's just an address that you, it's just like a wallet. You just send Bitcoin to someone's wallet and they call that like, they actually do call it like a Bitcoin ZK rollup, which doesn't like technically exist at all. And there's a bunch of them. There's BEVM. And if you go to these Twitter profiles, you'll see that they have like 250,000 followers and 10 million transactions and 1.5 million daily users and 700,000 active wallets. And, you know, these numbers don't make sense at all for a wide category of these so-called Bitcoin L2s. So unfortunately, like the Ordinals hype and the BitVM paper just gave scammers they understood that, okay, there's demand for everyone's looking for what's the new Bitcoin layer two going to be. And the whole Bitcoin space is unfortunately awash with these scams at the moment where people are just pretending to be like fully fledged BitVM L2s, but they haven't done, they don't. Like I said, BitVM doesn't even exist yet. There's a few projects that are trying to implement the stuff that Robin Linus has talked about. Robin Linus himself is trying to build a reference implementation. It is not finished yet, so no one really knows how any of this is supposed to work. But there are a bunch of projects that have started to scam and saying that technology is already complete. And they have tokens that are trading on Ethereum that are trading at everything from like $70 to $250 million valuation. So that's like one of the negative sides of this excitement that has also happened. So my point was basically to say that, yeah, there are some BitVM builders that are struggling right now, but like it sort of feels unfair to like criticize them when there's a larger group of just pure scammers that are grifting this space at the same time. So it is a difficult, like what I want to say to like people that are listening to this, be extremely cautious to anyone that says that they're a Bitcoin L2. Try to understand what it is that they have implemented, what exists in open source code that you can look at. I know that most people don't do this research, but if there's any space that you need to be very cautious, it is currently the Bitcoin L2 space. It is a complete mess.
Scammers and fraudsters are actually a byproduct of an actual growing and real ecosystem. So there's actually like some symptom of success here. I know, Eric, you've been with Bitcoin since like the early days, back before the Bitcoin dark ages, I'll call it, back before like the monetary maximalist, like laser-eyed maxis really gained control. And I think this is where our very first episode with you kind of talked about that change in Bitcoin culture. But now we're seeing it kind of shift back to, I think, a more familiar territory. And despite some of the challenges that I think you've illustrated here on the episode today, the fact that there are challenges in Bitcoin that people are working to overcome is like extremely refreshing and very optimistic. So overall, just like how would you rate the health of the Bitcoin ecosystem and your perception of its direction?
Yeah, as much as these Bitcoin L2s have problems, I am so thrilled that we have Bitcoin L2s with problems rather than just having Lightning that everyone says is amazing and is going to solve everything. If I had to choose between either of those two things, I would much prefer the reality where there's tons of teams, smart people that are aggressively trying to bring better layer twos into existence. So, I mean, what we ultimately need for Bitcoin is we don't, I'm not that convinced that we need to take, you know, all, everything that Ethereum has done and put it onto Bitcoin. Like, why? You can go and do that on Ethereum if you definitely, if you really, really need to do like decentralized lending and decentralized trading and all that, just go do that on Ethereum, get a reasonably secure pegged in Bitcoin, pegged in version of Bitcoin and do those activities on like that. We don't need all of the Ethereum stuff to exist on Bitcoin. I don't think so. But what I do know that we do need, we just need a way for me to be able to send Bitcoin to you in a scalable and private fashion, just so that Bitcoin as a currency works. And everyone has believed that that would be Lightning, that Lightning would solve those problems. And same way, you know, same way that I was bullish on BitVM initially, I was bullish on Lightning initially too. But, you know, Lightning developers are also coming to the conclusion that these channels that we're trying to scale Bitcoin through have constraints with inbound liquidity, the user experience, as much as we're trying to patch it up, some problem appears somewhere else in the system. It's like a balloon that you're trying to squeeze out the water of, and it just pops up somewhere else. That's sort of how it works when you're struggling with the Lightning design space. I think that Lightning developers are at the stage now where they would happily say, we want our next upgrade of Lightning to not use channels at all. So if that gave them like a convenient out of not saying, okay, Lightning Network didn't work, like we have a new version of Lightning that doesn't use channels. It uses state root updates and either ZK proofs to make sure that those state root updates are correct, or some right. type of optimistic challenge response. So basically roll ups, but let's call it Lightning. So, beautiful. But yeah, I think the Bitcoin ecosystem has woken up to the idea that Lightning is not going to work. So that's why everyone is trying, you know, so a lot of the hardcore Bitcoiners, there was a white paper that came out for something that was called ARC. And I don't know, you guys maybe didn't pay attention to this, but there was a massive interest in ARC. And if the reality of the situation was that everyone in Bitcoin was happy with Lightning, why would everyone throw themselves to this new protocol called ARC, which claimed to have solved some of the inbound liquidity issues of Lightning, or some of the other issues of interactiveness of Lightning? Obviously, there is this big pent up like realization now that maybe getting Lightning to work in a decentralized way is not where we're going to end up. We're seeing, like, you just have to look at the data, like custodial wallets rule the day. 90% of Lightning users use custodial wallets because it's just so much more convenient. And that is such a sad outcome. So we know that Bitcoiners, as much as they don't want to admit that sometimes that Lightning has been a failure, we see themselves throwing in themselves at things like ARC, like anything that is different or that is better. So the overtone window has changed to we need better second layer solutions on Bitcoin. And I think that with enough people with grit and will and desire, we're going
to
get there.
Well, Eric, it's always fascinating having you on, and both your commitment to technical assurances offered by cryptography and the way that they are just leveraged across the space is always just a fascinating learning lesson, and also just a good reminder of like some of the history of this space. So thank you for coming on and kind of updating us on the progress of Bitcoin. And as Bankless listeners might have been able to tell, like, we've been doing more Bitcoin content lately. And that's because of some of the technical unlocks that Eric has been talking about here on the show today, and a much more like optimistic and bullish frontier than we've seen in the Bitcoin world than we've ever seen before. So, Eric, thank you for coming on the show today.
Thank you. And David, is it the 30th of May that you're going to be in the ring?
30th of May. That's right. Yeah. Okay. Are you going to be at Consensus?
I'm going to be in the audience. I'm not going to be rooting for you. You know, Nick is one of my best friends. but I will.
So you have a side, Eric.
Wow.
Wow. Okay. This is. We're talking about the 30th of May.
No, we are friends. We are friends, and I hope you guys have a great fight and you both get to like show your muscles, and I hope you fail in a non-embarrassing way. And
do you have money on the other side of my poly market?
I'm not gonna
he doesn't want to tell
the markets. Right, you do
No, I love Nick and I'm rooting for him. I think you have a decent shot though, David.
Eric, let me ask you though, you're a betting man, I know you. Okay, so if David wins, will you shave your head again?
No comment.
All right, I'll take it to Twitter.
All right, Bankless Station, you guys know the deal. Crypto is risky, DeFi is risky, layer twos are risky no matter what layer one they settle to. But we are headed west. This is the frontier. It's not for everyone, but we are glad you are with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.